Thanks for joining us on the JX today. We'll stick with the weather, or more accurately, climate. The kinds of plants that thrive in a garden in Redding are not the same as will thrive in a garden in Klamath Falls or in Medford. Each place has a different calendar of really hot days and really cold days. The Federal Department of Agriculture, USDA, designates plant hardiness zones and puts out maps showing them. Medford, Klamath Falls, Redding, all in different zones. And the zones themselves changed last year a bit. Some places stayed in the same plant hardiness zone, and some changed. Let's get into the meaning of it all. Lucretia Weems is our guest, a master gardener, a member of the Native Plant Society of Oregon, and the author of a book on notable women in botany called This Wild Life. Lucretia, thanks for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks so much for having me, Jeffrey.
So the reclassification does not come out of the blue. There are periodic movements like this, right?
True, but this is the first map in over 10 years, the first new release.
Okay, so it is not a frequent thing then?
No.
Okay.
It's a big deal.
Okay, so I suppose the casual gardeners can just, you know, turn over their seed packets and check when to plant where they live. The packets often have maps, but yes, they are small and hard to read. What additional layer of information does a grower get from knowing a hardiness zone?
Well, you know, for one, this new map that the USDA released is, it's not apples to apples in comparison with the map that, the 2012 map that we've been operating from. It compiled 30 years worth of data instead of 10, which was the old map. It folded in a bunch of new data like proximity to bodies of water and altitude. So it's a much more complex study of the areas, and it also gives you the ability to drill down. It's when you go to the interactive map. Used to be you could get within a 5-mile radius of your piece of land, and now you can get to within a quarter of a mile.
Wow. Okay. I'm looking at the map now and zooming in as you say this and noticing that, yes, there are, wow, it's almost like BLM land, little checkers of land here and there that that are in slightly different hardiness zones from the land around them.
Yeah, there's a lot of detail, and as any garden will tell you, you know, this whole study of microgardener will tell you, this whole study of microclimates is huge in being successful, you know, knowing that the north side of your house isn't going to be the same as the south side, you know, much less a little ways down the road.
That's a really interesting point, you know, and we've talked about this before in some of our gardening segments with Lynn Kunzman, Garden for Life, also a master gardener, about the fact that, yes, it does make a difference on your own property where things have, where the shade falls and where the breezes blow, et cetera.
Exactly. And, you know, we know that we're going to continue to have cold snaps. That's just part of life. So even though, yes, we are warmer now across the board, in our part of the world, we're actually 3 degrees warmer than that last map, which is, you know, pretty substantial because the map as a whole across the country, it only shows a quarter of a degree uptick. So we're definitely seeing a little bit more dramatic shift than some of the other parts of the country. But my point being, cold snaps will continue, and just because we're warmer doesn't mean, you know, look at the ice storms they had in the Pacific Northwest in February, and, you know, that kind of thing will always, the random occurrence, same with our heat dome, you know, these oddities will keep occurring that don't really fit the model of our zone.
Yeah, excellent point there, because the same places that got the ice storms also got the heat dome. So we're looking at Portland as the place that got the 116-degree temperature and got the ice storm.
There you go. Yeah, I think extremes, I think we all are wrapping our mind around it, more extremes, are we not?
Lucretia Weems is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a master gardener, member of the Native Plant Society of Oregon. We're talking about plant hardiness zones, which have changed a bit with the map updated in 2023 from the prior map in 2012. You can join us with questions, comments, or thoughts about the plant hardiness zones by email to jx@jeffnet.org. So let's get into some of the nuts and bolts here. The plant hardiness zones are primarily numbers, but also some letters as well.
Mm-hmm. The letters are really just kind of subsets, you know. Mm-hmm. So we went from 7B to 8A. And we, you know, back to this microclimate issue, we have been able to grow some Zone 8 plants, at least in the Rogue Valley, for some while. So once again, this slicing and dicing is still an approximation.
Mm-hmm. So they go from, so basically the ones, the lower end of the numerical scale is also the lower temperature scale. So these are places that can, where it can get to like 60 degrees below zero in zone 1A, all the way up to 13B, where, with this, is that the lowest temperatures are 65 to 70?
That would be, I'm not looking at the map myself right now, but mm-hmm. yeah, that seems likely, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And when you 13, yeah. When you say 7B to 8A, are you talking about which particular, well, zip code, I guess, is what it gets down to, because you can put the zip code into the map.
Well, that's right. You can enter your zip code into the map. And I'm looking at the Rogue Valley and particularly the Ashland area.
Okay.
But
right.
I think we go beyond that. Medford is a little lower. So, but we've all, the entire Rogue Valley has been 7B, and I know that people are listening from beyond that area. So my presentation that I did recently on this was really geared to our little part of the world. And I think it's changed less than some other areas. So yeah, that map is, you got to dig into that map.
Right. Yeah. And I did notice some larger changes in other areas. But so the primarily the Rogue Valley 7B to 8A. I know I used the East Medford zip code 97504 and got it going from 8A to 8B. So like even
that's
within
right.
cities, a lot yeah. of variation.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Some smaller changes, too, as we mentioned. Eugene, for example, stayed in 8B, but it does show a hike of a single degree. What did you find when you looked at the degree part of the differences from last time?
You know that a degree difference to a gardener is not going to make a big change in your practices out there working with your soil. It's just not going to be that big of a deal, you know. There are plants that are going to be worth trying that you've had the nerve to try before but haven't had success, let's say, you know, that might be a reasonable gamble. That's what I'm seeing in where I work, is that there's a couple of things that I should have been able to grow, haven't been successful with, might be worth a try again now, because we might have just enough of a shift to expand our ability to have, you know, maybe 5 or 10 more varieties of plants than we've been working with.
Well, I'm curious then, Lucretia, what particular plants have you tried experiments with like this?
Well, I tell you, one of the interesting plants that you see around the valley and beyond is oleander.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people quit planting oleander some while back because it is poisonous. So if you've got pets or kids, you're probably not going to be trying oleander anyway. But, you know, it's a really pretty tropical-style shrub. It gives us those bright colors like a, you know, bougainvillea or something super tropical, fuchsias and reds. And that's a plant that really didn't look very good when I started out trying it 20 years ago. And I'm seeing it look beautiful around the valley lately, for instance. The other one that is a great plant for us is New Zealand flax, Phormium. And that's a plant that I lost a lot of when I first started trying to use them. And I really scaled back to using only the red Phormium, as super reliable in our climate. And now I'm thinking that we are probably close enough to where we can start using more of those New Zealand flax. And they come in a tremendous variety of color and sizes, and they're really a big, pretty, fun architectural plant. So that might be a good one to take a gamble with if you've got one that's doing well and you love it and you want to try a different color, that kind of a thing.
Lucretia, when you say you lost them to which, heat or cold or both?
Cold.
Cold. Okay.
Yeah. Both of those, it was just a little too cold in the winter for for them to flourish. And I'll tell you, there was just anguish up and down the coast, up the coast from us with the ice storms, where people lost 20 and 30-year-old plants that, you know, in that cold snap, which, you know, we know that's just, that's the way of nature. That's going to happen. But not regularly.
Right, yeah. The major tree loss, too, when the limbs break off in ice storms, too.
That's right.
All kinds of stuff. Lucretia Weems is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about plant classification zones, plant hardiness zones, as classified by the federal USDA, U.S. Department of Agriculture. You can join us with questions or comments quickly by email to jx@jeffnet.org. A couple of examples as I look around the map. Arcata, for example, stayed in zone 9B, but shows a decrease of a single degree, so the increases are not consistent. Klamath Falls, no change in zone or in temperature, but I looked all across the country. The town in Connecticut where I went to high school went from 6A to 6B and is listed as 5 degrees warmer, so very uneven distribution of changes.
It's really true, and when I looked at the two maps side by side, where I saw the biggest change was in the northern center of the country. I saw that shift in color really drop down to where, you know, that Nebraska, North Dakota, South Dakota, that part of the country is dramatically warmer. And then I saw the shift just below that, you know, in Texas and that part of the country where it's substantially hotter. So the whole middle of the country looked to me like it's got pretty substantial consistent change. But as you say, there you are in Connecticut, and here we are here with, you know, not that quarter of a degree average, but more like 2, 3, 4 degrees. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And so I mean, having looked at the maps for a while now, I mean, and giving the observations you just gave, were there any particular surprises then?
Let's see. I have a feeling that most gardeners will not be surprised. If you're just starting out in a new area, I think it's going to be super valuable for a good bar of the reality check right here, right now. But I think for people who've been living in an area for a while and working with this microclimate reality that is just simply, you know, every piece of ground changes radically given the condition of, as we were saying, you know, the shade situation, protection up against a building, the tree siting north-south, you know. So I think that that whole microclimate reality is something that gardeners are really used to working with. And if you're not, it's a great thing to study on your property. You know, what do you see that's different in what happens, let's say, if you live on a city block, you know, in your front yard versus your backyard.
Right.
Kinds of plants might behave very differently.
And it seems that any talk of hardiness zone has to come with reminders that, you know, this is not all hard and fast. You know, the weather does not behave by what forecasters and maps say about them. And I think our most recent frost advisory in the Rogue Valley came after the usual last frost day, didn't it?
That's crazy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We had such a long, cool spring. So there you go.
All right, so,
nature is fairly whimsical. I think we could all agree to that at this point.
So you mentioned some of the things that you might take another try at, like oleander, certain kinds of oleander, and more kinds of New Zealand flax. I mean, how about for native plants? I mean, have the areas where they are native shifted a bit?
You know, that's the important thing about natives, is that they are tried and true over the long haul. We're not seeing that kind of dramatic shift yet in long-term climate change to where that's going to be an issue. I will tell you that people are very excited to try, let's say, a Redding native in Klamath Falls, you know, or in it would be a better gamble to try it in Medford first than in Klamath Falls. But I know that that's going to start happening. And, you know, there's a whole division between a true native and a naturalized plant. But I think that we are going to start trying to extend plants that can respond well to an environment based on the changes that we're seeing in the climate. So I think that's going to be a fun, the next coming years, people are going to start having success with things that have been not successful here, and that's going to include natives.
And so you mentioned a change in how the hardiness maps were updated. Is that going to be a regular component of how that is done, and is it going to be done just as often as it was before?
Gosh, Jeffrey, I do not know the answer to that.
Mm-hmm.
I will tell you that map that was generated in 2012 was only 10 years worth of data, whereas the 2023 map is 30 years worth of data. So that indicates that, you know, it's getting, they're using more complex algorithms to generate the information, and that doesn't tell us when they will release the next one, though.
All right. Well, it's a really interesting map. You could probably spend days looking at this thing, going from zone 1A, where the bottom temperature hits minus 60, to 13B, where the bottom temperature is 65 above zero. And of course, we're sort of in the middle in the 7Bs, 8s, 9s, in the case of some of our folks in California. Lucretia Weems has been our guide to helping us understand the map, a master gardener and member of the Native Plant Society of Oregon and the author of This Wild Life. Lucretia, thanks for sharing this with us on the Jefferson Exchange.
My sincere pleasure, and happy gardening to everyone.
Happy gardening. This is the Jefferson Exchange. After a short break, we'll come back with underground history and talk about horror movies. Stand by here on JPR.